Agenda item number 16, Dr. Wesson here, status of the oyster stocks.
What happened? We're going to have some hard choices and hard things to talk about at the next meeting. And so today, what I wanted to do is just give you some of the backgrounds. We wouldn't have to take that time at the next meeting and show you what we're seeing on oysters and the stocks and what we've been talking about with the advisory committee over the past 4 or 5 months. We are talking about the public fishery, which is the blue line here, and it's been going up. I mean, we had our best season this past year, almost 300,000 bushels. This is kind of an anomaly up here because a lot of these mandatory reportings have not come in for the last couple of months. It'll continue to go up also, but we've been going in the right direction for, you know, a number of years now, and we have been growing, and as Chief O'Reilly showed you, you know, we've had a lot of people that have transferred and gotten into the oyster fishery any way they possibly can because it was what they could make money on. And, you know, when we look at this period, this period of growth is right when those numbers, all those transfers were happening and people getting in on exceptions. Of that total amount, almost 300,000 bushels, 26% of it came with dredges and 59% of it came with hand scrapes, which means 85% of the harvest came from those two gear types. For you, those of you that are not familiar with them, a hand scrape is just a baby dredge, 22 inches. That's a full-size dredge, 4 feet. They're very efficient gear types. And the other 15% of our harvest comes from hand tongs, patent tongs, and picking up by hand on seaside. And we're really not going to talk about them because they are pretty much in line with where they should be. We have everything's pretty stable for them. The concern that we have are for these areas that we are using these efficient gears for. This is just a quick way of looking at what areas will be opening this year. And with a color code showing that areas that are stable, I have one here in the Great Wicomico, one here in the James. Most of the other areas are declining that are going to be opening up for hand scrapes, and we have two areas that are way up Rappahannock that are pretty much entirely depleted, and we won't be recommending opening them this year. And I just want to kind of quickly go through each of these areas that will be opening and give you the, you know, what we're projecting the harvest to be this year versus what it was in this past year. A lot of these areas are rotation areas, so we have a very close by area to compare with. What is at the base of all this is that in this period of growth we've had, especially in the past 3 or 4 years, we had a very good spat set baywide in 2010 and a very good spat set in 2012 baywide. But in 11, 13, and 14, we had very, very low spat sets. So we've been living off these two big year classes, and what we want to try to figure out is, you know, we know we're going to start going down. We don't want to drop off a cliff and go back like it used to be. We want to have a soft landing and have the coast down so everybody can continue to harvest and we don't hurt the resource and hurt the bottom that we work on with these gears. Just as a summary that I'll be going through, I'm going to be using this slide over and over, but the red will be what we're projecting. And I'm going to start from north to south. For those of you that are familiar with Tangier, this is Tangier Island over here, Eastern Shore. We have a management area up there, and this is the only area that we can use the dredges, the big ones. And last year, we had Area 2 open, which is in two parts, and this year, Area 1 will be opening. We monitor all the beds in the state on a VMRC boat with a combination of VIMS, VMRC, staff, and we do with a patentong. That grabber is taking up 1 meter grabs. We randomly go over the beds that we check so that you can figure out how many oysters are on a meter. Then you just multiply it back to how much is on per acre, and we have some idea what there is to be caught. And last year's, this shows you what last year looked like in Tangier. The H's are the, in Tangier and Pocomoke, we have a two-year rotation, and so every other year they're opening, and the H's are the years that they open. But what we saw is that we had about 8 or 9 oysters per meter average. They were market size, and that'll be the dark red that, or the reddish orange in all these graphs will be the markets. And we had a very, very good harvest last year, and you can see 2010 was a good spat set, 2012 was a good spat set, but when you look at these different graphs, remember that each is a different area, each has its own signature. The spat set in the Great Wicomico will be very different from the spat set in Tangier and Pocomoke. I mean, if we can get 15 spat per meter in Tangier, Pocomoke as an average, that's very good for that area. But in another area, like the Great Wicomico, we may get 50 spat per meter. But each area can't compare, you have to compare within the areas as opposed to across areas. This is what the harvest looked like last year, starting at the beginning, the number of bushels they caught per day. And you say it started out, and we caught a lot of oysters, and it actually held up fairly good in that area, and we caught more than 73,000 bushels of oysters in Tangier Sound in that area that was open. The trips are about the same, and from the rest of them, I'm just going to show you just the harvest. So Tangier held up well, and it was because we had a good amount of market oysters there, a very big area with a lot of acres. But this is what Area 1 looks like. If you remember back to the 8 or 9, we're going into 2014 with less than 2 oysters per meter, which is very much less, and there's also not as many acres available for harvest in the area that's going to be opening this year. So the projection, and one of the reasons for that, just to step back, is that it is what's happening with culch. And this is not unusual for what we see in Virginia. And just to give you a little primer on culch, because the other thing that BMRC does besides doing the management is we do the restoration on the public beds by putting shells, if you recall the discussions in February. And our same stock assessment monitors the shells as it does the live oysters. And just to show you the things that happen, I mean, this is shells actually are not static. When we put them overboard, they begin going away. And this just shows you these are live oysters here. These are newly planted oysters. But over time, some of them bury and they get a boring sponge and they dissolve and they just disappear. And each area has a half-life for shells, and most of these salty areas, a half-life of shells is about 4 years. So again, this is what shells look like when they're brand new, but in just a year or two, they're starting to go in the bottom, they get other creatures on them, and they dissolve. And one of the things that we're fighting to try to maintain these areas in top productivity so that if we do get a spat set, we get the maximum chance of having the larvae attached to our shells is that we replant shells when the shells get down. But the cost of shells, as you remember the discussion, is getting higher and higher. And this year when we had 1,400 acres that needed new shells, we only had enough money to do about 500 or 600 acres. So not only are we looking at the stock assessment, we're looking at the shells. And if the shells disappear on some of our harvest areas, then it doesn't make a difference how many larvae are in the water. If there's nowhere for them to attach, we won't get any recruitment. And so back to this area, this area, the culch has been slowly going down. We actually put a lot of our culch this year into this area in Tangier and Pocomoke to try to start rebuilding these areas so that if we're lucky enough to get a set this year to come back up. But it is a constant fight to maintain habitat for the oysters that we're going to be catching with the fishery. But just projecting here in our only dredge area, we will be less than, we think we'll be less than half based on the stock assessment and the condition of shell and the amount of area that we have this year. So that's a pretty significant drop in available catch for the Wardman. Going down a little bit to the, go west to the Great Wicomico, Reedville's up here, this area, the pink are the areas that we monitor within that area. And again, this is to point out, Spetsen and the Great Wicomico is much more dependable than the Tangier Pocomoke. So in the harvest areas, we're talking about standing stocks up in the 60s as opposed to in the 20s like it is in Tangier. And when we look at the what we have available, we have about 10 market orchards per meter for this area, which is okay. It's similar to what it was last year. When we look at in bushels, you know, our stocks are better there. And part of that is that we have a large area of sanctuaries upriver from the harvest areas that continues to give us good sets on the area that we harvest. And so we don't rotate that area because we have a spawning stock that we can depend on. So projection would be that we'll catch about the same thing in that area. It's not as big of an area, so 15,000 bushels, we caught that many last year, we should catch that many this year. This morning in your first case, you were looking at the Rappahannock. In the Rappahannock, we rotate the beds in the lower river once every 3 years. We have six areas. This was the bridge that you were looking at with the power line. And last year, we had Area 1 and Area 6 open. This year, we will have Area 3 and Area 5 open. This is what we saw last year going into Area 1. We had, again, about eight orchards, market orchards per meter. And Area 1 is our largest area in the Rappahannock as far as total acreage to harvest on. So we had a good harvest there, 52,000 bushels out of the Rappahannock. But in this case, you know, as opposed to the Tangier and Pocomoke that held up, this harvest went down really fast. It started October 1st, did not make it basically to Thanksgiving, and because we had a lot of people working there, and it's not as spread out, but I mean, we had well over 100 boats working on this area through the season, and you know they were catching 2,000 bushels a day, and it once you get up 52,000 bushels, it doesn't take very long to get rid of them. Area 5 will open this year, which is, this is the bridge again. This is just upriver from the bridge. Looking at our stocks, we have a good amount of stock there per meter. We're back around 10 like we want to be in these areas. The problem is in Area 5, we don't have nearly the acres that we had in Area 1. So even though we'll have good per meter stocks, we will not catch as many orchards there because there's not as many places for them to work. And Area 3 is smaller, again, in area to work than Area 5. And, again, we do have okay stocks going into it. But there's not a whole lot of acreage for them to go on. So what we'll – and then these areas way up the Rappahannock, we're not even recommending opening these because they have not seen a spat set since 2010. They missed – the 2012 altogether. And so the projection for this area will be the Rappahannock will go from 52,000 down in the 30s probably, and that upper area will have nothing, so because we won't be opening it. Farther south, we will be opening areas in Mobjack. These are quite small. This is an area here, and then these two little red and green area will be opening. We have started a rotation between the York River and Mobjack Bay because it's down in Gloucester. And in the first year of the rotation, we had Area 1 open in New York. We anticipated, and then we went to Area 2 in the second year. But when we looked over at what we had in Mobject, there was nothing in the year that we were going to rotate into it last year. So we actually went back and worked in Area 1 and skipped that rotation. But this year, we've gotten a few more orchards in Mobject, but looking at the acres, we're much, much smaller area that we'll be working in. And in that area, even though we did catch 29,000 bushels in that upper area, again, it went down very fast. It didn't last a month for the harvesters that we had with relatively good standing stocks. But here's where we will be for this year with Mobject. Only have a little teeny area that's market orchards. We did a stock assessment last year. Some of these areas, a lot of this part's going to recruit into it. But even so, I mean, we're 5,000 bushels there will be a very big year in Mobject compared to the 29,000 we had before. And then the final area that will be opening is the James River. You're sitting right over here right now in Newport News, James River Bridge. We have a hand scrape area that goes up to just below Deep Creek. Above that area is the Hantong area. And again, we don't rotate this area because we have a large population of orchards up in the Hantong area that the way water circulates and larvae circulate in the James River, those areas spawn and carry the larvae down over these areas so we can harvest them with the expectation that we will get spat sets in each year because we're not hurting the ones in the Hantong area. The James River held up better than those other two areas, kind of like Tangier, but you can see it was working down by the end of the season. But we did catch 75,000 bushels there, and that was a very good harvest for us. That took care of Virginia's needs basically for Thanksgiving and Christmas, along with what we had in Tangier. What we're seeing in the Lower James is we've been concentrating on getting some more planting done in the James. Hadn't been done for a lot of years, and we're starting to build the culch back up in the James. And because of that, I mean, we have, you know, that around 8 to 10 orchards per meter of market orchards, which is similar to what it was in 2013. So it looks like our market orchards will be very similar to what we had last year, so we're expecting that the James will be just about the same, that if we caught 75,000 bushels there, we'll catch 75,000 bushels again. And when you add all those things up, because we've not had the spat sets to support us in 11, 13, and 14, we know that the harvest is going to go down. I mean, there's just not as many orchards available for them because we didn't have a spat set. And you know, what is saving us is the fact that we do rotate these areas. So we still have some areas that have spat sets from 2012 that we've not gone to yet. And hopefully we'll see a spat set this year and we'll start rebuilding again. But the fact is we are, expecting, 65% of what we had last year to harvest. So, this is where we are. We don't want to see ourselves drop off a cliff and go down to nothing over time. And, projecting 170,000 bushels, say, out of these hand scrape and hand and dredge areas, I mean, several years ago, we'd have died for that amount. I mean, we were kind of spoiled now that we've had these good years, and, we'll probably drop back down to somewhere around 200,000 based on what we have right now. But when you start looking at effort and the growth of the fishery, this is where we have the issues because, what we've seen is that this yellow is brand new. These are the hand scrapes. And as the harvest has gone up, they went up. And they especially went up in the past 2 years. So if we leave things alone as we have our regulations now, these areas that were done in 1 month will be done in 2 weeks. And what we see happen with the, when you have a lot of people working on these areas is that that's really hard on our shells. Not only does the handling of the shells as they get older break them up, but it also, the more people that we crowd into these areas, when they circle and the process of scraping and dredging, you go in a circle, and our shell plant areas are squares, and when there's so many people on the same area, they go in and they catch, but then they cull off, and they may not be on the square. So we're distributing shells off the good bar into the sediment that's not as good for supporting it, which both takes live oysters and puts them in that soft sediment as well as the shell that we pay for. So for the past 5 meetings, we've been working with the Shellfish Advisory Committee trying to figure out how we could deal with this. I mean, we actually suggested way back in here that, you know, that the Shellfish Committee should probably start dealing with this effort control 3 or 4 years ago, because, you know, we have a core of an industry that basically stuck out these years with nothing, and they've lasted, and they've been able to take advantage of the resource that we've had come back. But at the same time, we've had all these new people and a lot of part-time people that have come in and take pieces of their pie away. So the thought was that, you know, several years ago, if you could start getting some control on the effort, that maybe everybody would be able to have a more stable fishery. But we didn't do it, and we have a lot of options to consider, but none of them are really great. I mean, just to go through them, but because you'll be hearing about them next month, is that, you know, we can reduce the daily catch limit, and probably if we were to do right, if we wanted to maintain everybody in the fishery, we should go to 4 bushels per man. And that is so distasteful to the waterman, because you can't pay your expenses on that. But that's basically where we need to get. We could shorten the seasons, but, you know, that could concentrate people more. It would give some months that we wouldn't have anything coming out of Virginia. I mean, you'd be talking about just 1 month for each of the areas in Rappahannock, 2 months in the James and Great Pocomoco, a month in Tanger and Pocomoco, a month and a half. So they'd be very short seasons, and they'd be over, and you'd have to sit and wait for the next one. We could shorten the day, you know, go start later in the morning, have a short day, but it's very hard for guys to make a living on a very short day. You know, there's all sorts of options we can do in the days. We can, you know, we can work 3 days a week or something like that, but everything that you're pointing to, if you're trying to keep everybody in, you're trying that some way to reduce the harvest about half of where we are. You know, you could do quotas where you just divide up projected harvest amongst everybody we have, and I just put this as an example. If we divided the projected harvest by the dredge licenses, each person would only get 98 bushels. A hand scrape, they'd only get 200 bushels. We'd have to tag every basket. We'd have to have checking stations to do it. And unfortunately, we don't have staff to do anything like that. I mean, that's just way beyond our ability. But that's the small amount you're talking about that everybody would have to get if we keep everybody in. Or we could do the same thing. We say we're expecting 75,000 bushels in the James, make everybody tag every basket, to come back to a checking station. When we got to 75,000, that area would close. And again, we do not have the staff to do anything like that. It's just way much manpower than we have. We could limit everybody to one area, say pick one. If you wanted to work in the Rappahannock, when the Rappahannock was open, you could work, you'd be done. This is, you know, pretty easy to monitor that one, but it wouldn't be very good for the guys that have stayed in this for the long haul and tried to make oystering a living. We could switch gears like we used to. We could switch to pat dongs, you know, instead of the hand scrapes, which, you know, would be very distasteful to a lot of them because everybody now has switched to trailable boats so they can jump in their boat and they can go to these areas when they open and they could, you know, they can move around where pat dongs require a much bigger boat, much more equipment. It is, you know, very much less efficient. So it would get us back to where we want to be. And if you look at the history, you know, on that gear graph, that's what we used to do. Everything was with patent tongs in the past. Or we can, you know, consider some sort of limiting entry. Last year at the commission meeting, we did the first step in this, and that's we set a control date for last July. That we've done that part so that it set us up that if we wanted to do something down the road, we'd be able to work from that. And it's told everybody that if they got their license after July 1st of last year, that they would not necessarily be considered in any calculations for entry in the future. And just as an example, just based on what we see, I mean, we're talking about, getting down to 393 hand scrape license or 136 dredge license if you wanted to reach the similar sort of getting back to about half. We have worked, with the committee, and just show you a little bit what we've done. I mean, we have a very, very good staff here that can, and when you hear these issues on mandatory reporting, how important it is for mandatory reporting, if we have good mandatory reporting, we can actually do a lot of data analysis. If you don't report, then we can't do good data analysis. And the staff here has done a really good analysis that we've used in our shellfish meeting, where we've set a special database up for pre the control date, post control date, and we found our best data was from 2011 and 14 when mandatory reporting is the best, and we have showed all sorts of graphs for them to think about for making decisions. We have a lot of people working. We have almost 1,000 people that are working before the control date. 786, there's almost 800 that work with hand scrapes in that period, and 271 with the dredge. And then just since July, you know, we've had another 149 come in that are reporting, and 108 the hand scrapes. So you add the 108 to 786, and we're almost up to 900 hand scrapers, and the 47 to the 271, and we're well over 300 dredgers. So we have a very, very big fishery for a stock that is starting to decline and likely will decline even more next year. And if we're lucky, you know, we can get, as fast as this year or next year, and we can start building back up. But, you know, for the stability of the industry, you know, you hate to have to come back every year with these draconian-type thoughts of how you cut back or you open up, and we can figure out some way to stabilize this industry so that they can have a future and they can have better plans for staying in the oyster industry. And I just show just one graph, just shows, you know, how good of a presentation that we had for the committee. And I don't know, it's get broken down by years. So orange has been in the fishery 1 year. This is 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years. And these are the number of days that they worked. And what really is obvious here is that look at all the orange and all the yellow that's come in the past 2 years into this fishery. And, you know, there's a lot of them in the lower number of days worked. And, you know, what we see is a lot of people take vacations. They do part-time when things are so good out there for oysters, they'll take their vacation time or they'll go off another job and they'll come and do oysters while things are really good, and then they leave. And the people that make a year-round living out of it are left to, you know, eke out whatever they can in the whole year. So I guess I'm happy to answer questions. I mean, that's kind of gives you some background on what we've been dealing with. I think AJ's going to tell us a little bit of, he's going to talk about the shellfish meeting, but it's been very hard for them to come up with hard decisions.
Any questions from the commission for Dr. Wesson on the current status and projections of the stock? Mr. Tanker.
Dr. Wesson, I'm surprised you say it's been hard for them. I mean, a lot of those guys on that committee, I'm sure, have been harvesting oysters for a while, and then they look at that orange and yellow and kind of go, hey, I see the solution right there. They're not telling you that.
No. Not in a group.
Not in a group.
Any other questions to Dr. Wesson about the status of the stock or his projected harvests? I'm going to ask Mr. Erskine here to give a report on the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee and the ongoing discussions that have been going on there for quite a while on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. As Jim indicated, this was over the last, I guess, 5 months, a meeting every month. And it was well attended. I'd say we had a full panel or full committee almost every time, with additional people in the audience providing comment. We met just a week ago, I guess, and there were some motions that were passed. And I'll get to a couple or three of those as they were passed. I think what Jim has outlined is a situation where staff feels that the harvest, obviously, on the public side, is not going to be anywhere close to what it's been in the last 2 years. And I think there was a lot of concern from committee members about that. It's a matter of how necessarily should we address that. And a lot of the committee members took it very seriously when we started talking about taking licenses. And there were a number of other measures that Jim came up with as far as bushel limits and shorten the days and the seasons, stuff like that. We didn't talk as much about that. We went through a lot of these graphs that staff did a very good job in depicting the number of days that licensees were out there harvesting. I think what was clear, but it was not a motion, was there were hundreds, literally hundreds, of licenses that were purchased and not one single bushel was reported. Not one day of harvest, nor one bushel of oysters were harvested. Now, that doesn't speak to the reduction in effort because they didn't have any effort. They didn't report any effort. But those licenses are there, and they were sold. And I think it was 212, something like that. And then 95 licenses as well, 300 and so, that didn't report anything. That was one distinction, I think. Wouldn't speak for the entirety of the committee, but most, if not all, committee members were in agreement that those licenses could or should be removed from the fishery. The other thing I would highlight before getting to some of the motions, I guess, was whatever decision would be made would not be effective until January 1, 2016, because there are licenses that have been sold for this season, which starts, the public season starts October 1, 2015. And the commission cannot go and take that license and provide a refund to those watermen. So they will be in the fishery, regardless of what decision is made, as if there is a proposed reduction of licenses, cannot be effective until January 1. And oyster season opens October 1st. And so there will be 3 months that no effort reduction will be felt until that January 1. So in terms of the motions that were passed at the committee level, it was to allow transfers. We talked a little bit about transfers because there was a concern with the younger generation being eliminated from this if licenses were to be taken, and how do you provide an avenue for young up-and-coming oystermen to get into the fishery. So there was a concern about that, and there was discussion about a transfer, a hand scrape, and dredges only tied to people that had paid their oyster resource user fee for the previous 2013, 14, and 15. That was unanimous, that there was an ability or a mechanism to provide for a transfer, and we'll talk about I'll talk more about that, I imagine, next month. The biggest, I guess, issue, obviously, again, that we talked about was the reduction in effort, and there was a motion that did pass, albeit not unanimously. I think it was three opposed to that motion, but it was status quo. So it was not reducing any of those hand scrape or dredge licenses by 50% or any other percentage. And like I said, that was not unanimous. So the other motion happened to be keep the seasons the same and things like that, identical to 2014-15 season. That doesn't speak to any of the harvest reduction or these alternatives and bushel limits and things. But those were the motions as presented, and they passed, you know, the committee. There was a tremendous amount of discussion about alternatives, and there were some people that spoke in favor of reductions in the number of licenses. So even though the motion passed that it would be status quo, there was some strong opinions that there should be reduction in some of the licenses. The people that spoke in favor of keeping things status quo is they recognize that there has not been a downturn in the harvest, that the last 2 years have been a good harvest. And until the fishery sees or the harvest goes down, it might be premature to enact some harvest, some effort reduction and remove some people in the fishery. Others might have comments, but I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Erskine. It's very edifying.
Mr. France, I believe you were at the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee meetings, too. Is there anything you can add for the commission's edification?
Well, as a fisherman that's been in the hand scrape industry since it first began, you know, it's a lot of watermen that work full-time that depend on this to make their living. As shown on the graphs, probably about half. And as a group of individuals, it's hard to tell somebody that you're not going to be able to work next year. But, you know, I'm afraid this is going to be thrown on us. I don't know if the Shellfish Advisory Committee is going to be able to agree on any kind of reduction at all. In my opinion, it's in order for the fishery to survive, there's going to have to be some kind of reduction.
Any other questions from the commission?
Yeah.
Mr. Ballard.
It sounded to me like, Dr. Wesson, you were kind of saying that in a perfect world, we would have kind of limited the entry a few years back. That for one reason or another we weren't able to do. And then we set the control date, I think, at this meeting last year. We do have the availability, though, to go further back than the control date, right?
Okay. Yes.
So essentially we do have the ability to go back and make it as if we had made it a limited entry back in 2011, yes. 2012.
It just turns out that our best data, mandatory reporting data, is 2011 forward. So those are the data that we concentrate on, concentrated for the committee on analyzing.
Well, let me make just a couple of observations here. One is, I think, a hard path for the commission. We have to deal with the stocks that we have, not the stocks we wish we have, and, you know, while we're in much better shape now than we were a short number of years ago, we need to keep an eye on conserving, preserving the future, too, for this industry. And while nobody likes to take licenses, until I see other examples or other possibilities for the commission to consider as a menu, for lack of a better term, it seems to me that my preference, as a general principle, would be to have a stabilized fishery for the full-time, longer-term oystermen who have been through the tough years.
not sure that I would like to see their economic opportunities limited because there are people that have jumped into this fishery either as a last minute in a gold rush or because they're just picking up some quick cash along the way and they're really not oystermen. They're just part-timers. So my preference would be here, the full-time watermen have gone through the hard years with the oyster stocks here and seen some benefits now here. I'd rather keep our eye on the ball for their benefit. It's just a general observation or a general principle. That said, is there any other thing that needs to be said at this point here about this discussion item?
One thing that just should reemphasize is that in 2007, when we began doing the rotations, I mean, one of the selling points for the rotations was the fact that you'd be able to plan and you'd be able to know what's a waterman to be able to know. I mean, everybody would be able to know what's coming down, and that is working well for us in that these rotations we see what we're going to have available. So you can make these kind of, even though they're hard decisions, you can make an objective one based on what we see.
I would just make one other comment, I guess, Jim highlighted some. If you leave all the licenses in, then the suggestion would be to go to a 4-bushel limit. And that was, if you were, from the committee perspective, that was not very favorable, I would say. It would be more favorable to maybe look at a reduction in the licenses versus a 4-bushel limit. That seemed to be unanimous. A 4-bushel limit was really a non-starter in the fishery. So,
I have a question.
Mr. Prince.
Yes. Do you have any idea yet this year of what kind of spat set that we have, or can you tell yet?
No. I mean, we know we are seeing spat on Vemstas shell strings. And we know in the James and the Piantec and Great Wicomico that we had a good pulse in the Great Wicomico and the Piantec in June. Generally what we see is if we get an early pulse like that, it's a good one. But there have been some years that we've seen those great pulses and we've seen nothing. The only thing you know for certain is if you don't see them, you won't see any spat set. So we are seeing encouraging signs that you know, we do see some spat on the shell strings. Hadn't been as mean in James, but James is usually a little bit later than those other two rivers.
One more comment, please.
Yeah, Mr. Prince.
I would like to say, you know, as an oysterman, I do keep an eye on what Jim says, and from what I've seen over the past years, he's been pretty accurate on his predictions.
Are you used to that kind of praise?
We try. We put a lot of time into it. So.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Wesson. Thank you all for a very insightful and perceptive discussion here. We got a tough path to take here.
Up here now, we have the, we've tried to capture as many options for you as we can in the in the notice that we would like to put out, to consider all these things. And it may be a mixture. It may be that you have to, you don't take as many people out, but you have to cut a bushel limit, or you cut the season limit or something. So we want to be able to do any sort of addition or subtraction in what we come up with our recommendation. Whatever we do, I mean, there will have to be, since we won't be able to start any effort reduction to January 1st, there will have to be some sort of reduction for October, November, December, no matter what we do. I mean, that we'll be recommending. That'll be a separate, like, two-part thing that as we go into ever control, then some of the things that we take away in October, November, and December will come back to them in January.